you were to tell a six-year-old what you do, what would you say?
I help women in particular work out what careers they want and the kinds of work that they want to do that lights them up and makes them feel happy, fulfilled, and like they're having an impact.
It's crazy that we need to be told that we actually can enjoy what we do every day for our entire life. Like, that's mashuga nuts to me. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Secrets in the City, where we look at stories of our past and turn them into lessons that help us build confidence and strategies to help us have a better future. My name is Dr. Catherine Isco, although everyone just calls me Dr. Cat. And once again, I'm your proud host for this episode. And what an episode it will be. We have Claire Sieber. She is an incredible woman because she also helps women. She is a career and leadership coach that helps women get in the driver's seat when it comes to their career. But this is what I love the most. She helps them actually enjoy their success. Go figure. She's worked for some incredible companies like Colgate, NBC Universal, and I believe Shell. But you know what? Why am I talking? We're going to let Claire do all the talking, right?
Yeah.
Welcome, Claire. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Can I just say, this is such a fabulous setup. Mm-hmm. It is so fancy sitting in a proper podcast setup, much better than my one at home where I've just got like my screens, my little potty mic, and we hope for the best. This is very professional.
Oh, well, and it's funny because this is what we're going to be talking about, perceived success. I think, oh my God, this is like echoey. And like, if you look at I have weights holding on to like the microphones and there's like lights everywhere. And I think, I'm sure we're going to get into that today. But before we get into all that, I think the easiest way, I always like to ask people, if you were to tell a six-year-old what you do, what would you say?
Yeah, I would say to somebody, you know, a six-year-old that asked me what I do is I help women in particular work out what careers they want and the kinds of work that they want to do that lights them up and makes them feel happy, fulfilled, and like they're having an impact.
It's crazy, and I mean this in the kindest way. It's crazy that we need someone like you. And I mean this, okay, so you get what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
It's crazy that we need to be told that we actually can enjoy what we do every day for our entire life. Like, that's mashuga nuts to me.
I think it's probably the biggest reason why I got into this space, because I realized, even on my own career pathway, I got to that point where I, you know, did all of the right, in inverted commas, all of the right things. I got the good grades at school, and then I went and I studied at uni the things that I apparently was good at. Then I got a job based on what I studied at uni, and then got 10, 15 years down that pathway and was like, I don't really know if this is what I really want to do. And I think that's true for a lot of people, because we end up making decisions based on what are we good at and what can we make money from, not what do we really enjoy and what do we care about in the world. And that's usually the missing sweet spot, is the combination of all four of those things, which is commonly known as ikigai, a term for purpose, which I'm sure you've heard before. But for most of the women that I work with, they'll come saying, I feel stuck, I feel lost, I feel unfulfilled, I don't feel seen, heard, valued, noticed, whatever it might be at work. And there often might be some really practical reasons why. And so we have some really tangible work that we can do in that space. But when I ask the question of, well, what are you passionate about? What do you like doing? That is usually when you get the greatest gap of silence.
It's crazy. First, can you explain to the audience what Ikigai is? I love the concept, but I don't think a lot of people know what it is.
Yeah, of course. So Ikigai is a Japanese term, which essentially stands for purpose. Mm-hmm. And so it came about by the people based on an island in Okinawa off the coast of Japan, which is known for having the greatest, or one of the greatest, concentrations of centenarians on the planet. And they talk about this idea that to live a long life, it is the combination of all of those four factors. Yet I think in society, we tend to just focus on those two. What am I good at? And what can I therefore make money? How do I make money from what I'm good at? And we miss those other two. And then we get this sort of sunk cost bias piece, right, where I'm like, I'm in so deep now, I can't possibly get out of it. And so then we stay stuck and unfulfilled and miserable.
I'm sure everyone in the audience is thinking, 99.9% I would say of the audience, because it's including me as well. You know, you have those days where you think, is this as good as it gets? Or is there more? And I think that's the question that you're getting people to ask. And it's hard. It must be so hard, because would you not say that some people are a bit embarrassed or ashamed that they got so far in life and they were like, why did I waste all that time?
Yeah, I definitely think that is true. And I also think, like, to cut the crap as well, I also think we have, you know, when we do talk about purpose, there then becomes a felt pressure that I have to find my purpose, and therefore that purpose has to be the connection of all of those points that I was saying before. Mm-hmm. And so I think what then happens is we paralyze ourselves too, because we go, well, I'm not happy. Like, I'm not even unhappy, but I'm not jumping out of my skin every day to do what I do. Mm-hmm. But I also have no idea what the intersection of all of those points looks like that I can make a genuine living out of, that I need to sustain the life I want to live. Mm. Even more pressure if you've got children and people that are relying on you. And so then I think we paralyze ourselves, because we're like, well, I don't even know where to go now. And so what I would say is that purpose doesn't always have to mean it's your full-time job that is the thing that brings you to life. I work with many, many people that have found work and hobbies and things that light them up, which has then enabled them to derive more meaning from their day job, because they see it for what it is now. Mm. So I do like to say that, because I do think there's a lot of pressure also on people to be like, you have to find your ultimate full-time job purpose to be happy. And I just don't think that that's true.
I'm not sure if you saw, I think it was 2 weeks ago or so, and I was a bit reluctant to post this, but I was feeling it. So I always say, you know, if I'm feeling it, likely someone else is. And I put this post, you do not need to have a purpose. But I prefaced it by saying, I'm not saying that purpose isn't important and it's not a guiding light, but there's a step before that you don't have to trip on. And it's just asking the question, what do you believe in? What, you know, what makes you happy? Sewing makes me happy. Walking my dogs make me happy. And I think while we're doing those things, we start to let our mind wander, because we're in the flow state. And that's when you have these light bulb realizations. So
spot on. And I think you're on the money, because it's about asking the bold questions. But for so many of us, we don't have the bandwidth or the capacity or just the brain space to feel like we can ask those questions. And so often we don't, until one day we decide we need to, and we decide to invest in ourselves or whatever it might be, and find that container of space to start asking those questions.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I will absolutely put all your links and the Instagrams, the Facebooks and the websites and so forth. So if people obviously want to reach out to you for a little coaching or so forth. So speaking about questions, this is like when the gray cloud comes down. Obviously, this is about Secrets in the City. And, you know, the premise of the show is, I think we all have something that we just don't feel absolutely wonderful about that's happened in our past. Sometimes they're very serious, sometimes not. But I always think that talking about them creates this positive ripple effect. So without further ado, what secret do you choose out of the thousands?
I found this incredibly difficult, but in a really good way. And when I was looking through the examples that you provided, there were some that, you know, you can skim through pretty quickly and you think, no, not me. But there were so many, many that resonated with me that I was like, which one do I pick that feels the most right for me in terms of where I'm at now, and probably the one that I, you know, perhaps can share the most about. So it was a great exercise actually to read through it. So what I'm going with is probably a hybrid of maybe like three, but I think the secret well, the way I would phrase it anyway, the secret is that I am a people pleaser who has many moments of feeling not good enough.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a deep one.
Mm.
It's a deep one. See, when you say that, it makes me a bit emotional because I experience that as well.
Yeah.
You know, we go through life and we're like, if you don't like me, how can I like myself? You know, that's the dialogue that I have in my head. So why did you pick this? Like, why is that out of the thousands, that one jumped out right now at this point in time?
I picked it because I think it's probably the one that has had the biggest impact on my life from a young age all the way through to now, and will probably continue to have an impact on me. But I also pick it because I know by the sheer number of women that I meet and speak to that I'm not alone. And so I think the more we can talk about it and the more strategies that we can give ourselves to help manage it and reframe some of the thoughts, then the better position that we're in. Because I live in a world now where, you know, with this particular secret, where it isn't about pretending like it doesn't exist. And I do not subscribe to some of the content out there that says, you know, here's three steps and you'll banish your imposter or whatever it will be. Because I just don't believe that is true. And I actually think that there can be some good that comes from the people-pleasing tendencies. There is good that can come from self-doubt when it's managed the right way. And I always say that every strength has a shadow. The gold is working out. When is it working for you? And when is it working against you? And so I feel that having this kind of conversation hopefully will resonate. Might be a great cathartic experience for me.
That's why there's tissues.
Yes,
that's why there's tissues.
Thank you. But it hopefully will resonate with a few people listening as well.
When's the last time that it, you know, that shadow took over you? Like, was there a certain situation that came up? Someone said something, someone didn't say something, they didn't, you know, answer an email, or, you know, when you message someone and then it looks like they're messaging back and there's a three dots and then they stop?
Yes.
Oh my God. That's like, that is my personal hell because my partner always laughs at me. He's like, why do you hang on to this stuff? And whether I'm 16 or I'm 86, it's going to be the same thing. I still want people just to like me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I use that exact example, the dot, 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 or, you know, you're in a group chat with a few people on Messenger or whatever it might be, and the conversation's like, go, 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 go. And then you might say something and it just stops. And you're like, what did I say? What did I do? Have I upset someone?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if I'm really not, you know, I haven't managed it well, I might even message separately one of my friends just with some random shit, right? Like, it won't be anything of relevance. Mm-hmm. It might just be a question about, I don't know, an activity on the weekend or something, because I'm like, if they're mad at me, they also won't reply to this or that, you know, and that'll give me the information. But I've gotten a lot better, and I use this exact example even in workshops that I run with people too. I've gotten a lot better at being able to say, what evidence do you have that this is true?
Mm-hmm.
What evidence do you have that this is true, and what else could actually be true? But to answer your question around when was the last time that it impacted me, I mean, to be totally honest, today.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been navigating an interesting situation the last week or two, just with some work that I'm doing. And I, you know, I'm similar to you. I get up and I speak in front of hundreds of people. I run workshops all the time for clients all over the world. And I'm very aware and totally able to rationalize that I won't be everyone's cup of tea. And that's okay. But for some reason, this just particular example that has happened lately, I've really been struggling with, and it's brought out or brought to the surface insecurities that I, again, as I said before, hadn't squashed, because I don't believe you ever do, but you manage them better. Yet something about this has triggered them, and I have found it's taken a lot of my energy lately. It's taken a lot of my kind of negative, I've been caught up in the negative space of it. I've found myself then second guessing other work that I do in this particular space or with these particular people. Work that has had so much positive feedback before, has proven results, yet for some reason I'd allowed myself to just get thrown off kilter a little bit by someone. And I thought that's really interesting.
So it's a specific person.
A specific person as part of a greater group.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. All right.
Yeah.
And is there something about them or some way that they've communicated or said a particular word, or did they say it in a particular tone without inflections? Or
I think that it was probably all of the above, to be honest. I think it was a situation that was in front of like a group of people. They were obviously feeling perhaps frustrated or anxious themselves. I'm not sure. I'll never know. And just the tone of which they spoke was very abrasive, quite direct, a little bit undermining, asking, almost felt a little bit trying to find holes in my work, which hasn't happened to me before.
Yeah.
Well, certainly not like
in front of your face. Yes.
Yeah, it was just quite interesting, and it threw me off a little bit. And then since then, I've had some other conversations around it. But I think I've been able to kind of rationalize myself through that particular example now.
Okay, perhaps walk us through how you've rationalized it, because I think that'll be helpful.
I just try to keep asking the question around, well, you know, like I try to deal in data in terms of think of the volume of people that you work with. Think of the volume of people you've gotten up in front of or had conversations with and the positive impact that you've been able to have, proven through feedback, surveys, testimonials, whatever it might be. Now think about the percentage that this person is overall, which is about 0.001, and am I going to let 0.01% of something derail the whole thing. So, and that's a lot of the work that I often say when I work with people as well. Like, let's deal in facts. Let's deal in evidence. Let's look at what evidence do you have to prove to yourself that you are capable, that you are worthy, that you do have a positive impact with the work that you do. And how many examples can you come up with there? Are we really going to let this one example where it hasn't happened derail all of that? So that's probably the first thing. And then the second thing that I've also been trying to do is say, okay, well, what can I actually learn from it? What could a takeaway be from this for me that I could do differently in the event that it happened again? And so that has then led to making a few changes in the way I have run things, or at least trialing and testing them just to see what works and what doesn't. Because you never know, maybe people have different learning styles, people have different ways they like to engage, people have different expectations. And so it's that balancing act of staying true to you and your brand and what you stand for, whilst also then trying to be flexible, I think, to cater to others. But it really is, when we talk about being a people pleaser, it's a slippery slope, isn't it, between being you and staying true to you and sliding too far down the slide to become what you think others need, which is a battle you'll never win.
You won't. And there's this saying, I'm not who I think I am. I am not who you think I am. I am what I think you think that I am. Meaning, basically, no one really knows who I am, because I'm just predicting it based on your reactions, but you probably are not thinking of me in the first place anyways. Like, and I always say that the only opinion that we really should care about is ourselves.
Yeah.
Yet we're in this gold, you know, this fish tank, and we're all just goldfish looking at each other. Ooh, you know, what are you doing today? You know, it's, good morning, good morning.
Absolutely.
It's so hard not to compare.
It's so hard. And we, you know, and I do think women in particular, I was having this exact conversation this morning with a client. We have such a tendency to go outwards first and then inwards. And I think for a lot of us, and I know that I am absolutely this person, we're just not used to asking ourselves, what do I want? What do I care about? What's important to me? And that can be from such a small level of even like, what do I want to order at this restaurant? Or what do I want for dinner? Or what movie do I want to watch on Netflix? All the way through to what do I want from my relationships? What do I want from my friendships? What do I deserve from those? And so I do think that it is a habit that is ingrained, certainly for me, has been ingrained for such a long time that I really had to work quite hard to get back to the point of asking, what do I want? And I've found even sometimes I've had well-meaning friends that will say things to me like, I know you, I know what you like.
Mm-hmm.
And the more work I've done on myself and the kind of more excavating I've done, that's come up for me too, because I've lost count of the number of times that people have said that to me over my life.
Wow.
And they're probably not wrong, because I think particularly growing up and in my, you know, earlier like adult years, I was pretty easily pleased. So it was easy for me to say, oh yeah, whatever you want to do, I'm okay. easy with whatever. And I think that's such a people-pleasing behavior.
And was that just a natural tendency, or was it modeled off of someone, as in did you see someone else do it and then you thought, this is how I'm going to act, or how did that come about?
I think it was definitely something I saw modeled a lot growing up. I also think, and maybe this is, I probably need to do more therapy in this space, but I am a twin. So I, you know, have shared my whole life. Like I shared a womb.
Yes.
So I do think that has played some part in me always thinking about others first, because I don't know a world where I've not had to consider another human.
Right.
And so I do think that there's elements of that that you just learn, and then you see it modeled, and then you do it yourself, and then it just becomes such a way of living that you don't know what you don't know until you start having those experiences where you think, hang on, I just said yes to something when I wanted to say no, or I just took on work when I didn't have capacity to, or, you know, I just allowed somebody to speak to me in a way that wasn't okay and I didn't say anything about it because I didn't want to upset them. And you then start becoming aware of all of these times where your desire to please others, or you're because you want them to like you or you don't want to rock the boat or whatever it might be, then really starts having a detrimental impact on you and where you fit into the world and the space that you allow yourself to take up.
You suppress your discomfort for the comfort of others.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you look that up in the dictionary, you will see my face.
I'm there with you, sister.
Yeah, we'll be twinsies in that way. So what's your brother like?
Is it your
brother? Yes, brother.
Yes, yeah, my twin brother, Adam. He's amazing. And I actually, he and I just recently did a podcast episode together too, which was so fun. He's awesome. We're very different people in terms of sort of strengths and skills and things like that. He looks at the work that I do and he's like, oh, my God, I could never do that. I look at the things that light him up. You know, he's an engineer, so he's very, you know, data-driven, very scientific, very, you know, loves to talk about, like, physics and the theory of physics and all these things, whereas I'm like, oh, Lordy. Wow, is that the time?
Yeah.
But in terms of who we are and how we get along, yeah, very similar. You can see where we came from.
Does he notice your people-pleasing tendencies?
I don't know. Probably.
Well, the reason
probably does.
The reason why I ask is if you were saying, like, you know, you're both share the womb together and you're saying that you're similar but opposite in some ways, is he sort of the opposite? If you were trying to please him, is he the opposite? Mm-hmm. Is he the one that always gets his own way? I doubt that's true, but in, you know, to the full extent. But
I think there are probably elements in him that are probably people pleaser too, which, you know, again, probably just goes to the way you were raised and things that you learnt along the way.
Mm.
So I think there's, he sees it in me. He probably also sees it in himself too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you speak about this in your workshop, the effect of the, you know, your nuclear family on your mindset and behavior and decisions and so forth? Or is that sort of out of the context? The reason why I ask that is, you know, nowadays the line between work and home is, there is no line. Mm. It's sort of like this sandy beach that we just cross every day. And I think more and more companies are recognizing you have the same brain at work than you do at home. And therefore, this expansion of introspection on the self. And are companies allowing that nowadays? Like this whole more of a deep...
Varied. I would say varied. Mm. I do share some of my stories, certainly, because I think, you know, as you well know, storytelling is a way more engaging way to learn than just rattling off, you know, PowerPoint dot points. But it definitely depends on the audience and it definitely depends, I think, on the organization for sure. But I think you're right, but they are starting to understand more. We don't just take our skin off. Yeah. When we walk through the door at 9 o'clock in the morning and then put it back on when we leave, we are who we are. And the more we can embrace that and encourage people to be that, the better for the bottom line of organizations.
Absolutely.
That's another topic for another day.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, do you prefer to work with organizations that are a bit more open-minded in regards to that? Are they easier to work with?
Yes.
Yeah, I bet you.
Absolutely easier to work with. And organizations that genuinely want to drive change as well, as opposed to, you know, just ticking the box. But I think that's true of every level, whether you're an individual or an organization. Mm. Do you really want to grow and learn and drive change in yourself or your organization or your team, or are you just showing up, taking your workbook and going home?
Yeah. If someone's listening and they work for a company that perhaps is a bit more backwards thinking and they're more forwards thinking in this regard, what can they do to talk to their manager, GM, CEO, whatever, to try to change their mind and say, like, look, the data is here that shows that workplaces that do support the in-depth work of their employees and teams are more productive, are more, you know, proficient, are, you know, innovate more and so forth. How can they make that case?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like anything, isn't it? You try to find the influencers inside the organization, get them on board, develop a business. And when I say business case, I don't just mean a glossy slide deck, but I mean a business case around, you know, what's in it for the organization. What do they need to hear to get on the bus with this? And so that probably would be a mixture of case studies and data and maybe even frontline people from inside that organization who could say, you know, this is what I'm seeing, this is how I'm feeling, here's the impact of what I think we could achieve inside the organization if we did X, Y, and Z. And have a crack that way, I think. I mean, I know if I was the CEO of an organization that had people come to me with that, I would want to understand more. And perhaps where there are organizations that don't, for those individuals, I think that's then where you have to ask the tougher question around, well, what are my values and what is my career criteria? What am I prepared to tolerate and what am I not?
I was listening to this, I believe it was a CFO talk, or I can't remember the details, but the point being is one of the audience members was talking about the fact that he was in a group and there was not a lot of communication, not a lot of cohesiveness. It was a lot of like whispers and don't talk about personal life and so forth. And asked the speaker, the CFO, like, what should I do? You know, we want to bring these people in to help us see the forest through the trees. And so she gave him, the CFO gave him some tips and this and that. And he was like, well, I tried that. And she finally said, well, you have 2 feet, walk. And I thought that's really interesting. If you can, of course, that's wonderful. But if you have mouths to feed and, you know, a mortgage to pay or a sick family member, then you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And it's so hard. And I really feel for those people because these are people that actually know the benefit of working on themselves, but they're stuck in this prison.
Yeah.
That they have to go 9 to 5 likely every day. It's so hard. It's so hard. I guess I was saying that sort of rhetorically to the people out there. I see you. I understand you. Keep going. Just look for that light. And perhaps one day you'll have that freedom to make that step. But it's got to be hard. You must hear some stories in the organizations that do allow you to explore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, full disclosure, like I still hear these kinds of conversations even inside organizations that are open to driving the change because it does take time.
Yeah.
And it is a journey that you have to continue pushing on. It doesn't just because an organization decides we want to focus on this now and we're going to bring it into the light doesn't mean the problem is solved, right? Mm. There is a real lag effect between where the decision is made to where it actually starts to permeate through an organization and the people on the front line feel it, believe it, can see it, and then start to trust it.
Mm.
So absolutely, like I hear stories from organizations who I really do believe want to drive the change, but the people on the front line, they're not feeling that change yet.
Mm.
It takes time.
Do you think some organizations do it just to tick a box?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What do you think? Do you think the people, I guess what I'm asking is, do they not know that people know that they're just ticking a box?
I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, the rose-colored glasses person in me would like to think that if you thought you had people in your organization who knew or believed that you were just ticking a box, that if it was me, I would want to do everything in my power to prove them otherwise.
Yeah.
But yeah, I absolutely believe there are organizations that are just ticking the box, and it starts at the top.
Mm.
It's usually not the people at the middle management layers of the organization that are just ticking a box. They are busting their asses, doing everything they can to try to drive change. But, you know, what's that saying? The fish rots from the head.
I've never heard of that one.
The fish rots from the head. Like, if we can't get true buy-in at the top, then it is lip service, isn't it?
Yeah. Right?
But what I would say to that too is that that doesn't mean we stop trying. And
good
that
point.
Doesn't mean that we cannot still have a positive impact in the meantime, even whilst we get the top layer fully invested.
Mm. Sometimes I say, you know, there's top down, there's bottom up, but then what we can also say is there's also inside out change.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, obviously that's what I'm passionate. You're passionate. Now, why do you, like, do you have a background in this work? Like, why, you know, you must have a bit of a past, I think, in corporate life. I think you told me a story about brushing the teeth, being on a phone and doing your hair at the same time, which I don't know because I don't know if you have three arms, but tell me about that.
I can brush my teeth with my foot. That is a real talent of mine. No, not really.
Stay tuned for that episode.
Well, can you imagine, though? What a skill to have. I definitely have a past corporate life for sure. Mm. I have my background traditionally is HR, communications. I've worked in resources, so mining, oil and gas. I've done fly in, fly out, donned the steel cap boots and worked up in the Pilbara. I have worked over east in Melbourne for quite a number of years. I was the head of HR for a very large retailer over there. We had about 1,500 people, 300 plus stores, a warehouse, designers, product developers, salespeople, you know it. That is probably where I had my greatest learnings of my life, I think, and certainly my largest, going back to my secret, certainly my largest people-pleasing imposter, you do not deserve to be here moments. But I also believe that that those 15 years of work and those 15 plus years of experiences in that space before I then started my own company were pivotal to where I'm at now, because they taught me about what I believe, but they also taught me that you can, whether you work in mining or oil and gas or tech or medicine or retail or anything in between, the industry might be different. The products and services that we sell might be different, but human beings at their core are the same. Mm-hmm. They want to feel heard, seen, and valued.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always love when people try to pull this, oh, you know, I haven't been in our industry before, so you don't really know. You can learn that stuff.
Yeah.
You can learn it. But do you know people? And are you invested in understanding your people? Because that's not a skill. That is a choice that you have to make.
Oh,
I get on my soapbox. Can you tell?
No, I love it. Total mic drop moment. And, I mean, you're preaching to the choir right here. I mean, I wish people just for one day, you know, the managers, the CEOs, the GMs could just somehow, like those movies where you switch bodies, you know, for a second, that they could, you're the one person can be the CEO and vice versa, just to walk a mile or a day in someone else's shoes. Imagine the effect on organizations when you actually feel in your gut, in your heart, what it's like to not be seen, not be heard, even just for a second. Imagine the change that that would make.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, never forget where you came from. I think there's a lot of, you know, again, and we're talking at the very senior levels, but there are certainly many examples of role models that live by that. But I do think there can be a tendency to, for a number of reasons, right? Your priorities change, you're busy, you're drawn into different things. But it was actually a participant in one of the workshops that I ran a few weeks ago who said two things. And she said, never forget where you have come from. And the second thing that she said was, we all bleed the same blood. And those are two simple statements. But I just think they capture the essence of everything, right? Like our titles might change, our salaries, our paychecks might change, my office where I sit might change, my team might change, my organization might change, but humans are humans at the end of the day if we choose to see them all that way. But when our own worldview changes, and usually it's not conscious, but we know that it does, that is when we need to probably step back and just take some time to reflect again on, you know, where am I at, and am I living into the values that I claim to stand for?
That's the thing. Actions speak louder than words. And I think just like you can get power, you can lose power.
Yeah.
And I think power magnifies character, which can be a good thing. You know, when we see the Michelle Obamas of the world, Malcolm X and so forth and so on, the list is long. But we also see the other side of that as well. And I was listening to, I can't remember who it was, but the summary was this amazing American Army, like colonel, or if you will, was asked to speak at this conference, and limo, amazing hotels, and, you know, had people serving him, and, oh, did you want an espresso? Did you want a long cap? This and that. Like, basically just people drooling over him. Came back the next year. He was no longer serving for the government, and no hotel was booked. He had to take a taxi. He had to book his own flights. When he got there, he asked, is there some coffee? And they said, oh, there's some styrofoam cups over there. Same person, same talk, treated totally different.
Yeah.
And the moral of the story was, remember that people don't treat you for you. They treat you for who you are, as in your label. And that's a very sad place to be, that we're in that world. You know, fame, same thing. You know, people talk about fame being the biggest drug of all, but what if that fame gets taken away from you? What if that CEO role gets taken away from you?
Yeah.
You're going to be at the bottom, and how are you going to want to be treated?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the hardest questions to answer, and I often ask it to people, is who are you? And the response you usually get is, oh, well, I am, you know, I don't know, I'm a doctor, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a this, I'm a that. And I'll often say, no, no, those are roles that you play. That's not who you are.
Mm.
And I was having conversation with a client probably a month or so ago now, and you know, she loves the work that she does, similar to you and I were talking about that before, loves the work that she does, but acknowledges that therefore she struggles with boundaries and struggles with, you know, the ability to say no to things, prioritize other aspects of her life, health, well-being, relationships, etc. And so I asked her the question of, well, who are you without your job? And oof, she burst into tears.
Oy vey.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big question.
Yeah.
And she said to me, I've never thought about that before. I don't know who I am without my work. And, you know, but we actually then had a really beautiful conversation about exactly that. Like, you are so much more than your job title. You are so much more than the organization that you work in, or the brand that you work for, or whatever it might be. Who you are is how you make people feel, and the impact that you have on one or many, and who all of your beautiful traits and characteristics and experiences that make you you.
Yeah.
That's who you are. And I'm loving this because this, as I said, it's been very cathartic for me to say.
Good. Your bill will be in the mail.
You've got to remind yourself of these things from time to time too, don't you?
You do. And I think that, you know, we're both in positions that sometimes we teach because we want to learn. And, you know, like I'm learning here, you're learning, et cetera. One of the exercises that I often do is get people to, I call it the self-esteem pie, where you draw a circle. And especially when I was working with individuals with body image issues, I would say, you know, what makes you feel fantastic? They're like, when I get on the scale and the weight's going down, or when my pants fit, or someone gives me attention. I said, okay, what if you're in an accident and you become blind and you lose a leg, you lose an arm? What else? And it's usually crickets. I do that exercise because I was in that position. And I didn't appreciate all the other things that I had. But, you know, sometimes when you talk about these things, you're like, God, I sound so conceited. Have you ever had that experience yourself, or even working with people?
Oh, all the time.
Ugh.
All the time. I think, I mean, one of the conversations that I often have in the, like, particularly the women in leadership or the career development programs I run for women, is around how to sell yourself and your achievements without feeling braggy.
Okay, can I just get my notepad out? Let's go through this right now. This next part of the podcast is just for me. We got to spend some time here because I'm jonesing for this information. I hate this stuff.
We do, like, I hear it all the time. And I mean, truth be told, I did it for a really long time too and still do it. It's like we have this, I think where we get stuck is that we don't see the middle ground between not talking about my skills, my strengths, my accomplishments, my achievements at all the way through to the other end of the spectrum, which is arrogance or bragging. Mm-hmm. So I hear two phrases, like, I don't want to seem arrogant or braggy, so therefore I won't talk about my experience, my experiences, my skills, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I ask people to describe what does it mean to you, like, what does arrogance mean to you? What does it look like? That's always really interesting because then the commentary is usually like, oh, it's people who constantly talk over people. Mm-hmm. It's people in meetings that take credit for other people. It's people who are, you know, constantly pushing themselves into the limelight and taking away, you know, the ability for others to have a voice.
Mm.
And so then my question is usually, well, do you do any of those things? And they're like, well, no, not at all. And I'm like, well, no, how could you? Because you're not talking about any of your achievements at all. But then we start to explore this whole piece in the middle that's like the whole between 0 and 10 is 1 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
And we can operate in that space. But I think there's so many layers to this stuff. That's the real, I guess, you know, just talk about them piece, but it's the mindset piece, I think, that gets in the way as well, right? Mm-hmm. Firstly, our ability to know our strengths in the first place, like what even are they? What are my achievements, which requires you to step back and work that out. That's the first part. The second part is then, can I actually own them confidently and say, these are strengths of mine? We're all pretty good at saying, oh, these are all of my weaknesses, but can I also flip the coin and say, these two are my strengths? And that is where I observe the two collide, knowing them and owning them. And so then a lot of the work that I do in that space is, again, excavating them to find it out, but then also working out, well, what are some of the other things that get in the way of our ability to own our strengths, our achievements, our accomplishments? And I remember asking myself this question, probably pretty regularly, actually, when I, you know, beat up on myself around how much, I will actually say, how many times do you need to hear this feedback, Claire, before you own it? And since I've started forcing myself to do that a little bit more, I have definitely noticed I'm more able to own it. Like, for example, I can pretty confidently say now that I know my strengths are warmth and relatability. For the most part, people find me pretty relatable and down to earth, like to cut the crap, can do corporate, but would prefer to just be a real person and talk real talk. I bring humor and heart into everything that I do. And I'm a curious person who loves just hearing other people's stories. And I can say that now with confidence, but that has taken me some time to do for a number of reasons. The first is working out what they were. The second was, how much data do I feel I have before it's okay to own them?
Right.
And then the third was getting on top of, well, if I say these are my strengths with confidence, what will people say? And will they judge me as being arrogant? But then I just go back to the examples that I just gave you of when you actually ask people what arrogance is, none of those things are in line with what I've just done.
Mm-hmm. One thing that helps me is just understanding that it actually isn't about me. Like, I put myself as how can I help people? Because if I could just help people and hug people and buy shoes, my life would be complete.
Sounds
like
perfect.
That's literally that's all I want to do. So sometimes that helps me, that the reason why I'm telling someone about me is because I truly, honestly, from the bottom of my heart, actually know that I can help them.
Yeah.
And that's helped me a lot because my partner and I are yin-yang. He wants to buy the world. I want to save it. And I don't value money. I just don't value money. I value when someone messages me after I do a post and they say, you have no idea, you've actually changed my day. And I'm done. I'm like, my work is done here. Yeah. Let's go shoe shopping.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I need. And I think, would you say that's helpful for people? Because I guess what I'm getting at is oftentimes women belittle how much of an effect they can have on people.
Yes.
And I'm not even just talking about careers and work. I'm just talking about the fact that when you're in a shopping center, when you're at Kohl's and you just pass by someone, you know, maybe a mom that has a crying baby and you just, you know, pat her on the back. It's like, oh my God, I've been there, done that. It is hard.
Yeah.
You probably changed that woman's day. But we just think, oh, no, she would have gotten that anyways.
I absolutely think that people underappreciate the power that you can have at an individual level and the positive impact you can have on someone's day through something that you might do and then you don't even think about again, right? Like to your point, walking past somebody in the shops and smiling at them or going for a walk in the morning and smiling at them. You know, it's interesting, actually. I went for a walk a few weeks ago and I was listening to this podcast. It was the Mel Robbins podcast. And she was talking about, you've heard it?
Heard it. Loved
she
it.
She was no, talking about says, that says, exact says, yes. thing. And I'm going to forget the university that the study was done in, but it was talking about the fact that we know that acts of kindness are important, but we undervalue the impact that they can actually have. So, therefore, we don't do them enough on an individual level. And I just thought that was so interesting.
It is. My partner was recently hospitalized twice in emergency, and, you know, he was on drugs. There was no way he was going to be hungry. I was like starving. I was starving. And, you know, there's an emergency. Nurses everywhere. The long and the short of it, this nurse went out of her way to get me crackers and cheese, and I swear to God, these were the best crackers and cheese. Like, they literally were made by virgins, virgin tears. Like, they were so good. And she probably just said, you know, oh, here's crackers and cheese. Just that act of kindness that I didn't have to go home and, like, you know, eat the fridge. Like, it was so meaningful. And I still remember her. I know what she looks like.
Yeah.
It totally made my day.
Yeah.
Totally made my day. So what I want to do is finish off, how can people work with you? When should they work with you? If they're reluctant, if they think, oh God, she's going to think I'm stupid, which I'm sure. Oh yeah, I'm getting the hell yeah look.
I would never think that.
Sorry. As in you've had that before, that women might think like, oh God, I don't want to contact her because she might think like, I can't be helped or something like that?
I think so. I think I've definitely had women reach out to me before thinking you must think I'm stupid or whatever. And actually this morning I had a call with somebody and they said, you must think I'm your most difficult client. And I said, not at all. And I just said, I see you. And a lot of what you're experiencing, you're not alone. Like I've been there. We've all been there. It might look different, feel different, smell different, but we've all had those feelings of anxiety or not being enough or whatever it is before. So, yes, I have heard it, but never, ever. I'm in no position to judge anyone else, so I never we never can, right?
Like No, and I did perhaps we will clarify that on the podcast in the sense that I just know that sometimes when I reach out for help, the first thing I think of is, you know, why would they help me? Like, for example, when it has to do with branding or website or, you know, anything to do with business, I'm like, the first thing I think of is, shouldn't I already know this already?
Totally.
Like, I must be stupid because I should know this already. And that's perhaps the explanation of what I meant by that is, I think as a perfect, you know, there's different kinds of perfectionists, but one of them is that any sign of having to work hard to gain information equates to I'm stupid.
Yes.
So we should know everything about everything on earth, from astrophysicists to like how to raise children, like everything. Yeah. And if we don't, we're stupid.
I resonate with that so deeply, and to the point where these last few weeks I've been doing quite a bit of work even with my accountant and stuff, and I swear every time I email with a question, I am like, this person must think I'm an absolute tool.
There you go.
Absolutely. I absolutely resonate with it. But I then again try to flip the narrative and just think, when it's asked of me in return, do I ever think that? No. Mm. And then sometimes I even add to it too, if they do think that, I think that's more a them issue than a me issue.
Hell yeah. And are these people that I really want to work with in that sense? So So let's say, you know, people are in a stage of their life where they just feel like something is missing. They feel like there's something in regards to their career, or let's just be honest, blended life, career, work, etc., you know, home. And something just doesn't feel like it's sitting right. They feel like they can achieve more. They reach out to you. What's the next step?
Yeah. There's a few ways to work with me. The first is private one-on-one coaching, and that's where we focus on really everything and anything about that individual, curated for them. So it's time and space, a container for them just really to focus on, where am I at, where do I want to go, and how do we get there. I work three key prongs: strategy, mindset, and action. No point building a strategy, taking action on it, if we haven't dealt with the mindset stuff, because it'll always then get in the way. So private coaching is the first way. For organizations, I come in and I run workshops, do a bit of speaking, or a couple I do some multi-month women in leadership or career development type programs, which I do love. But I'm also very excited because I'm just about to launch my first self-paced online 6-week Transform Your Career Accelerator, which was beta tested last year. The feedback was awesome. So I've now set it up with all the tutorial videos, and that is for busy women who just want to cut the crap and get the information needed on how do I get heard, seen, noticed at work. using kind of my five key career pillars that help them do that.
Oh my goodness. I can just hear the signups right now spread across the land. My God. Congratulations, first of all, because that's quite the feat, you know, to put all that into 6 weeks.
Yes.
Very difficult.
There's a lot in there. There's a lot in there for sure.
Well, we will put all the links and your Instagrams, your socials, your, you know, everything that is publicly shareable into the show notes. But we always end with a bit of a speed round. Are you ready?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. If you were on death row, what would be your final meal?
Lobster and champagne.
That was really easy and very accurate answers.
Love them both. I think about, and I like food. I think about it often.
Wow, we're going to have you over because I love champagne.
Oh, do you like seafood too?
I do love it, okay. But I like the champagne more. That is for sure. All right, what is the best advice you've ever received?
Best advice I ever received kicked me in the stomach when it was first said to me, but it was hugely powerful. And that was, if you keep giving, people will keep taking. And that is your fault, not theirs.
Wow.
And that really upset me when someone said it to me. But there was a lot of truth in it.
People pleasing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it almost felt like the worst advice, but then it was the best advice.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. At the time, I was like, that's so mean.
Yeah.
But it was the best. And I've carried it. It was some time ago, and I've still carried it with me today.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what is the worst advice you've ever received or ever heard?
Mm. Oh, gosh, so many. The worst advice I hear is around being and I get it. We're coming off the back of it now, which is great, but thinking you need to act like a man to succeed inside your career.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong when I say that I fully acknowledge where we've been and the survival mode that comes with that. Like, I get it. I've lived it. I've been on those career pathways. Like, I get it. But I think that it is the worst advice ever and just makes for a world that's missing half of its strengths.
Yeah, absolutely. And Women's Day is coming up and your event is sold out, so I can't even promote it, but they can join the Long Lunch Club. I will put all that in.
Yes, definitely. You know, put join in the wait list for the
wait
future
list and
events,
so forth.
For sure.
Put that because I think it's going to be sensational. If you could go back and change one thing, would you? And if so, what would it be?
Look, I probably wouldn't have got that tattoo on my butt that I got.
Are you being serious?
Yeah. But I honestly don't. I don't believe. I really don't believe in regrets. I do think, though, and this is probably a bit of a top line thing to say, but if there was one thing I could go back and I wish that I did, it was when I was in high school. I really wish I had have gone on one of those like 6 month overseas exchange programs then and gone and learnt in another country, in another culture. And that's just something that I often think about. But no, I believe that all our experiences are just building blocks, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah.
It might not feel like it at the time.
They
often don't, actually.
No.
But I really do think they lead us down the right path.
They are, and I'm sure someone listening is thinking, I'm in the cesspool of life right now. And I always say, you know, even if you're down in that dark cave, there is still going to be that tiny glimmer of light. And just focus on that.
Yeah.
And focus on that next day and next day.
Yeah, and feelings, like, I think my therapist said this to me a few weeks ago, and she was like, Claire, feelings are like clouds. They do pass.
Mm.
And, you know, admittedly at the time I probably wasn't in the space to fully receive that. But she was right, because I think about how I felt then and how I felt now, and the two are very different. So it does pass.
It does.
It will pass.
It's one of my favorite sayings is this too shall pass, which is my last question, which what is your favorite quote or saying?
So this one I will read to you. It is actually a couple of sentences just from a book that I recently finished reading. It's called The Girl Who Fell from the Sky by Emma Carey, and I highly recommend it to anyone. She's just got such a beautiful story, and I underlined this in it, and she says, "Staying soft when the world could have made you hard and keeping your heart open when it wants to close are some of the bravest things that humans can do." And every time I read it, it just gives me goosebumps, and it reminds me of staying true to the strengths that I believe I have and the characteristics that make me me, and don't change that for the world that wants you to be something else.
What a way to finish. Claire, you know, we're going to press like stop record, and I'm still going to want to talk to you.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for your time today. Everyone, this has been, I hope you think this was as incredible as I thought.
I have loved this conversation.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, on that note, guys, remember that every day is your chance to shine. So why not make that today? Thanks for listening.